This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in. Another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. Joined today, very excited to welcome back on our good friend, Joshua Nunn. You know him at Step on a Duck on Twitter, Action Network, College Football Handicapper extraordinaire, putting in the early work. So I said, hey, man, open invitation. Anytime you want to come on, we'll chop it up throughout the summer months. So this will be the first, actually the second. We've already chatted with you once. 115 days away as we record this from week zero. And Duck, just before we dive into it, because today, if you're listening, we will dive into the ACC, which you've been doing a deep dive on right now over at the Action Network. We also collaborated, more so you kind of had the real insight, and I just rode your coattails, but we have a best bet that we will get to at the end of the podcast in the G6. But for you, Duck, another year of prep, how, give us the sausage. How do you make it from a prep standpoint?
Well, it's a great question. And really, my preparation methods have had to pivot slightly just given how prevalent the transfer portal has become in college football. It actually became a little bit easier this year because we didn't have a portal window after spring practice. And so after teams have concluded spring ball, we should get a little better idea of the roster composition and what these teams are going to look like come fall camp. But my first priority in February or early March would be to assess the transfer portal and really try to get a handle on players that have come and gone to see what these teams' strengths are going to be and see if they were able to effectively replace departing talent. Again, it's an easier process now because there's no portal in the spring window. So now, since spring ball has fairly well concluded, we should have a pretty good idea of what these rosters are going to look like. The second thing I like to do. Oh, go ahead.
No. Continue.
Second thing I like to do is try to get my power ratings in line, just making these micro adjustments to align with the roster additions and subtractions. I also like to weigh in coaching changes, coordinator changes, and scheme changes to try to give myself an idea of how frequently a team will be favored, by how much, just to try to figure out how many games a team should win. From there, that'll put you further ahead once the regular season win totals do drop, and then you can kind of assess whether a team is going to go over or under. The third section of this, which I think is the most important and oftentimes overlooked, is the schedule. Where are the tricky spots, the back-to-back road trips, the hangover spots, revenge, rivalries, things of that nature? Once you have a team power rating that you can rank per conference, you can really get an idea of how heavily weighted, good or bad, these schedules are. We have these 16 to 18 team super leagues, and there's a schedule imbalance every year. A case in point, and we'll talk about it in the ACC, North Carolina State has a very easy schedule comparatively in the ACC because of the teams that they avoid. They only play one of the top five. They get six of the bottom eight projected finishers in my rankings for the ACC. Florida State, on the other hand, is a team that really needs to improve, but the schedule is not going to be conducive to racking up the wins as they have to play two SEC teams in the non-conference, and they have to play the top four projected finishers in ACC league play while only pulling one of the top six. So when you assess the strength of the schedule, both in the non-conference and in each of these teams' respective leagues, that'll really help give you an idea of how many games a team should win, irrespective of the personnel, because you have to really figure out what these opponents look like, and then you'll just be so much farther ahead come regular season win time. I do like to watch the spring games. I think it's important to try to catch those, but fewer and fewer teams are having a spring game, and even fewer of those are televised on TV, yeah. So it's not what it once was, but that's really what I'm trying to get a handle on here before summer, and I think I've done a pretty good job of doing that, and I've put out some of the information on going team by team through the ACC and the Big 12 up to this point. We're going to do that for every FBS team this season.
Yeah, I can't wait. And, you know, you've, like I said, open invitation for you. So we're going to get your thoughts on it throughout the summer months here on the show. But I wanted to pare it down to the ACC. And let's start with the favorite. That is Miami. You know, didn't win the conference last year, obviously, as we recall, with the, you know, unusual tiebreaker situations. Didn't win it 2 years ago. But pound for pound, no doubt, they are the most talented team. Looking at the futures market right now, Duck, they're around minus $1.35 at a handful of shops, minus 140 at FanDuel. So if you want to get down on Miami to win the conference, win total, DraftKings has a couple of options. 9.5 if you want to lay heavy juice or parlay it with someone else, minus 270 to the over, 10.5 plus 110 to the over. And we can jump into the schedule here, because the non-conference includes a visit to Notre Dame, which we'll discuss. There's a game of the year line out there. There is no game against SMU, no Louisville. They do have to go on the road to Clemson, October 3rd. Florida State at home, Pitt at home. What do you make of this Miami team with Mensah coming in at quarterback? They go out, they get Cooper Barkate, his, you know, main target at Duke. Malachi Toney is back, but they do lose, obviously, Reuben Bain, Mezidor, both first-round picks. Carson Beck is a third-round pick. So where are you on this Miami team heading into 2026?
Well, I definitely think the offense does have every opportunity to be much more explosive than they were last season. I think Mensah will fit in just fine here, and I think the skill positions upgraded significantly. They'll have plenty of compliments from Malachi Toney, and even their third and fourth receivers are proven commodities at the P4 level. The offensive line did not see an infusion of transfer talent, but it's really kind of next man up, and Miami develops offensive linemen fairly well, so I think the O-line will be just fine here. I think Miami will be very explosive offensively. Defensively, there's no question they take a step back. They lost a ton of production in the front seven, as you had mentioned, and I think it's hard to expect them to replace those talents along the edge and at linebacker. They also lose a really important secondary player, Keontae Scott. So it'll be really hard for them to have that sort of domineering status about them that they did last season, but I still think that they'll be very good per ACC standards. In my opinion, I think it's really hard to go over the win total for Miami, even if you do like the Hurricanes to win the ACC. I think we see that spot at Notre Dame on November 7th, and that's just going to be a really tough spot for Miami and a real motivation spot for Notre Dame. I like Notre Dame in that matchup laying anything less than a touchdown. And we always see Miami year after year, and there's really no exception here. The Hurricanes will mess around and play down to competition that they should handle, and they lose a game that they shouldn't. So I actually would lean under the win total of 10.5 here, but the way I think you could approach this is that you can take Miami under the win total and parlay that with them to win the ACC. And that pays out about 5-1 on that negative correlated parlay. The Notre Dame loss, projected loss, will not impact their ACC rankings at all. And I still think they're set to lose a game to somebody that they probably shouldn't. Could be Clemson, could be Florida State, could be Pittsburgh, could be Virginia Tech late in the season. But they could lose another game, which would cause them to fail to succeed the 10.5 win total. And they could still very easily get into the ACC championship game, where they'll be about a touchdown favorite over anybody that they would play. So I do like that approach there. And I also do have a futures play on Miami to win the conference.
Well, let's get into it. BetMGM has the game of the year line out. I was talking to Matt Grill from DraftKings Sportsbook. He thinks his game of the year lines are probably going to come out around Memorial Day. So I think that's when we'll start to see a lot of them start to trickle out, Duck. But we do have a game of the year, and it is Notre Dame minus 5.5 against Miami. We went in depth with the Irish with Brad Powers last week, and you hinted at it already. You and I love situational spots. We're going to hit on some of the situational spots this year, including Miami. The week before visiting Notre Dame, they will be on the road at North Carolina. They'll be a big dog, our big favorite there. Could be a weird spot heading down to North Carolina in that particular situation. But, you know, I was at the Notre Dame game against USC in 05. I was at the game against Ohio State in 23. Wasn't there in 88. Talked to Brent Musburger about that one last offseason. But I think this game is going to rival some of the best crowds you've ever seen in that stadium, whether it be 88 against Miami, 93 against Florida State, 2005 against USC. It's going to be a night game. It's going to be a raucous atmosphere. This fan base is going to be drooling for an opportunity to beat Miami. So you talk about a situational spot. This is a big one for the Irish, even though obviously Miami will be very locked in to potentially win this game, but it will, in theory, mean more. Or you would imagine for the Irish?
I would imagine so. And I think the schedule sets up pretty well for Notre Dame in this situation. They have a recent bye before this game, then they play Navy, and then they'll have this one, and then just Boston College after that. So I think that we'll have Notre Dame's full focus here. And hey, just call it what it is. Notre Dame was unjustly, in my opinion, left out of the playoff last season. Miami was able to sneak their way in. I would imagine there's plenty of bulletin board material. I would imagine Marcus Freeman has Notre Dame and this spot circled in red ink. They would discuss it all summer. I think this is one they absolutely want to win. And I think that Notre Dame is really going to make a statement this season with their physical level of play and really a season to leave no doubt for the playoff committee. So I would expect an exceptional effort here from the Irish, and I will be backing Notre Dame in this situation.
Yeah, you talk about a spot the following week. Notre Dame fans, deep cut, still have nightmares about Boston College in 1993 after the Irish beat Florida State in the game of the century. This year, it's a sandwich spot between Miami and SMU. Granted, it's a home game, but that could definitely be a sleepy spot where Boston College is probably going to be, 28 to 30-something point underdogs in that spot, especially if Notre Dame is undefeated. So I think from a situational spot betting-wise, Boston College November 14th against the Irish will be a look there. Well, I mentioned SMU, Duck, so let's get to the other contenders in the ACC. And last year we saw SMU beat Miami in a game down in Dallas. They don't play in the regular season. Right now, based off of the odds at DraftKings, SMU is the number two shot at 7-1. Kevin Jennings is back for another year at SMU. Rhett Lashley, even though there was thoughts maybe he could leave to go to Arkansas, he stays at SMU. What do you make of the Ponies this year? And, you know, looking at where they're at from a win total standpoint, SMU comes into this season with a win total at around 8.5 juiced over.
Yeah, I mean, SMU did the work before they transitioned to the ACC, and they really invested a lot in the trenches on both sides, and that really helped them make the move to the Power Four. And I think that that's really something that we've seen help their program sustain a high level of success. They've won 8 games each of the last 3 seasons, and I would expect them to win 8 or 9 games again this season. SMU has a very favorable draw in the ACC because they play the bottom 5 projected finishers in my metrics, and they only have to play one of the top 4, that being Louisville, the third week of the season. They also do have an early season test at Florida State, and I don't think Florida State is going to be particularly good, but that is a game where Florida State will have a game under their belt, and it'll be the season opener for SMU. And so the first 3 weeks of the season, we'll know right away if SMU opens 3-0, they are going to be playing meaningful football late in the season, and they will have every opportunity to control who gets into the ACC championship game, likely themselves. I like this team. I think that they did a fine job of reloading at the skill positions in the portal. Kevin Jennings is certainly a game-breaking quarterback and a game-changing quarterback, but he did get hurt last season, and we saw his style of play change while he was hurt. The team wasn't as potent offensively. He wasn't running the football as much. And it really affected SMU. The backup quarterback drop-off is significant here, and there's really a lot that has to go right from an injury perspective to bet a regular season win total over at this high of a number and assume 9-3 or better. So I haven't gotten to the window yet. I lean over 8.5. I think SMU is probably the most serious contender along with Miami in this conference. Full disclosure, I have Miami 10 points clear of anybody in this league, but I think SMU is set to have a strong season. Oh.
All right, let's get to Louisville. Louisville's always going to be busy in the transfer portal, and they're taking a bit of a shot in the dark. Now, it could be a high upside move with Lincoln Kienholz, the Ohio State transfer, who by all accounts was kind of right there with Julian Seyin last year in their run-up to camp, and Seyin wins it and runs away and hides, if you will. So you look at Louisville, they have a tricky game week one in Nashville against Ole Miss right now, anywhere from 7 to 7.5 point dog. Situational spot week two when they take on Villanova on short rest on a Friday night before they play SMU at home. So could be a spot to maybe back an ugly dog, if you will. They do not have Miami on the schedule. Louisville avoids the Canes, but that early week three game, as you alluded to, is going to be a big one in the ACC. So where are you on Louisville right now? If you look at the market, they are the third shot to win this conference at around 8-1.
You know, I project them at 8.2 wins, and I would lean over the win total at current, but the quarterback situation is a major question mark, and they're putting a lot on the shoulders of Lincoln Kienholz and assuming he's going to be that dude that's going to elevate and continue to help Louisville ascend in the ACC, and I just don't know if that's the case. They will have a strong running game with two of their running backs that returned from last season. The offensive line appears to be in decent shape, and I think that they upgraded some of the receiver positions, so there are pieces around Kienholz that can help him if he ends up maturing into the position and being a guy who can handle it. We really didn't get a good taste of that at Ohio State because he played so sporadically at Ohio State and was thrown into some tough situations where his performance didn't look very good. So, you know, possibly that experience and then having an entire offseason to be with the guys could possibly help them. Louisville's defense was sneakily underrated last season. They only surrendered 30 yards plays of 30 yards 14 times last year. They were very good at preventing explosiveness. They do have a lot of transition defensively, and so they're really going to have to try to work to get those units on the D-line and in the secondary kind of gelling together, and they're going to have to do it quickly with Ole Miss and SMU on the schedule early. I have Louisville favored in 10 games, but I have 7 of those spots favored by under a touchdown. So I do think this group could be in a lot of close games this season. Louisville was very heavily penalized last year. They had so many pre-snap procedural penalties, which handcuffed their offense's ability to have a higher output than maybe they should have. They've got to clean some of that stuff up. If they do, and if the quarterback situation hits, yeah, I think Louisville could be right there. I think it's a favorable draw. They don't have to play Miami or Clemson. They end up playing 5 of the bottom 7 projected finishers in the ACC. I would imagine it's 8 or 9 wins for this team as long as the quarterback situation is there. If Kienholz ends up not panning out, that's probably closer to 7-5 or 6-6.
All right, Duck. Clemson made some news yesterday as we're recording this on May 6th, and we're going to play those comments for you guys later on in the show because I have some thoughts regarding Dabo and the disappointing season they had a year ago, going 7-5 with everything geared up for a run to the playoff, maybe even a national championship. And they lose 9 players to the NFL draft, 2 in the first round, 3 in the top 35, Duck. And I can't remember the last time a Clemson win total was 7.5, but that is what it is right now at DraftKings. And they are 14-1 to win the ACC. They're a double-digit dog week one at Death Valley against LSU. It does feel like time is starting to pass Dabo and this Clemson program by. Curious how you power rate this team and what you're looking at with the Clemson Tigers in 2026.
Yeah, I power rate Clemson about 4.5 points lower than about everyone else that you'll see put out power ratings right now, which would put them about 4th or 5th in the ACC at current. I don't know that the schedule is overly challenging. The interesting thing about the win total, the books have finally adjusted on where Clemson is at on a program. Clemson's win total has been sky high for the last 5 or 6 years, and they have not exceeded their win total since 2020. So, and actually not even 2020 because that was the COVID year, so it would have been 2019. So yep. We're finally starting to see the books adjust appropriately on where Clemson should be and is as a program. And, you know, call it what it is. The landscape of college football has somewhat passed Clemson by because you're not able to necessarily recruit on the culture and the Clemson way of doing things because everybody else is able to get paid and Clemson hasn't really used the transfer portal and NIL to its full capacity. We did see Dabo go into the transfer portal and get 10 guys this year, I think could help. But the quarterback situation here is a little bit turbulent. I don't necessarily know if they've got the guy that they really want. Vezina backed up Klubnik the last couple of seasons and played sporadically, but I just don't know if he's a guy who's really going to elevate the offensive performance. And you made mention of it a little bit. The defensive losses are massive. It just kind of seems like this is a program that no longer strikes the fear of God into their opponents the way that they did during their 6 or 7 year run. And I just don't know if this team is going to be one that is going to see themselves as prohibitive favorites week in and week out. They might be favored in 8 or 9 games, but in situations where they used to be favored by 2 or 3 touchdowns, well, those are going to be under a touchdown favorite spots. And those situations include Georgia Tech, Syracuse, Virginia Tech, California on the road. They'll be a slight favorite, but not by much. And there's a lot of situational spots that I think are fairly tricky for Clemson this year. So I don't have them as a major player. They are still in that top 5 type of range, but I don't know that Clemson seriously threatens to win the ACC this season. Now, my opinion is okay to change on that. And if they were to happen to defeat Miami at home in their 5th game of the season, that could change kind of how you play the hand on Clemson. But I'll really have to see it before I start believing in that.
You mentioned the situational spots and a couple for Clemson that I'm curious if they're on your radar. You alluded to it, a Friday night trip to Cal, short week going out to Cal with Miami on deck. So Friday, September 25th, I would imagine there'll be, as you alluded to, maybe a slight favorite. So interesting home dog there in Cal at night. Things can get a little weird. I know they lost to Syracuse a year ago, but this stretch here where it's home to Virginia Tech, at Florida State, which is a rivalry game on Halloween, then a Friday night game at Syracuse before playing Georgia Tech, who you lost to a year ago. That Syracuse game, I remember, God, what was it, 2018, when a number one Clemson team went up to Syracuse and lost on a Friday night. So I know that Clemson lost to them a year ago. Maybe there's some revenge, but those two spots jumped out to me. A couple of Friday night road games seem a little precarious, if you will, for Clemson.
Absolutely. And I still don't think Syracuse is being power rated appropriately this year compared to the play we saw last year. They were a really feisty out before Angeli went out with injury. And you kind of have to handicap the offensive metrics that we saw the last 6 or 7 games of the season for the Cuse because they had a lacrosse player playing quarterback. Well, that's not the case anymore. I really like the recruiting job Fran Brown has done at Syracuse. I like the fact that Angeli comes back. He'll be very comfortable in the system. I think Syracuse is a team that can surprise. I don't necessarily think they're going to ascend to a point where they're threatening to win the league, but their win total is 4.5, and they're going to be much more competitive week in and week out than you might think. I like the Cuse to go over their win total, and I like them to really compete well in this spot against Clemson at home on a Friday night that you had mentioned.
All right, let's take a quick break with Duck. When we come back, we will dive into his surprise teams, his favorite win totals in the ACC. And as I alluded to, Duck and I went to bat together. We put in a combo play the other day, so we will hit on that a little bit later on here in the podcast. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. My guest today, the one and only Duck. Step on a Duck on Twitter. Action Network. Joshua Nunn is what you call him in real life. And he joins us as we're breaking down the ACC. Just a reminder, continue to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Let's keep this bad boy rolling all summer long. And let's jump right back into it. So we've discussed the so-called big boys in the ACC. And, you know, someone who certainly had his fun making jokes at James Franklin over the years at Penn State. I love the hire by Virginia Tech to go out and get James Franklin. He's familiar with that area. And if you could get back to 10 wins regularly at Virginia Tech, people will be very happy as opposed to what they were towards the end of his tenure at Penn State. So the Hokies come into this year, win total at around 6.5. Looking at the win totals right now for Virginia Tech, 6.5 minus 50 to the over. 7.5 plus 170 to the over. This Virginia Tech team, non-conference game on the road at Maryland, road game at Boston College. They do play SMU and Miami on the road, so some tricky spots there. What do you make of this Hokies team in 2026?
You know, I think it was just so disappointing to see how the Brett Pry tenure ended at Virginia Tech. They were unable to get on a roll. They could never punch up. It was just such a struggle offensively at times. And, you know, after the ODU loss, where they were really blown out badly by Old Dominion, I mean, they had had enough and Pry was told to hit the road. I think the situation broke as good as it could have for Virginia Tech, because James Franklin falls right into their lap. And in a somewhat unprecedented move, he hired his predecessor to be on staff coaching defense. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how those two work together. You're going to have a little Penn State flavor. I think that's evident by Grunkmeyer coming in and playing quarterback for Virginia Tech. I would expect we see much more power football than what we've come accustomed to from the Hokies. We should see plenty of two tight end sets, but I think that there will be some attitude along the offensive line. I think we'll see the running backs run with anger, some things that we've just seen missing from Virginia Tech over the last couple of seasons. There are some significant departures on defense that are going to be concerning, and really the defensive line underwhelmed last season. But you've got some Penn State guys that played under Franklin that portal in, and I think that you'll see the defense improve probably before the offense does. So I think Virginia Tech could be a team that you might seek to bet some unders on. I think they'll play slow offensively. I think they'll control the clock. But I definitely think that we'll see a quick turnaround, and I would say that within 2 or 3 years, Virginia Tech will be competing to play for ACC titles. When it comes to this season, They get a real easy opportunity in their first game against VMI to kind of see what they have. And then I would assume people will be talking about how Old Dominion has played these guys year after year. So we should get a real good effort in game two. A trip to Maryland, I think, is a tricky spot, but it is certainly a winnable game, as will be contests against Boston College, Pittsburgh, and California early. So you're going to have an opportunity for Virginia Tech to gain program momentum the first half of the season. If there is an issue with the schedule, it's the close, because they've got to go to Clemson and SMU back-to-back. They go to Miami, and then they host rival Virginia late in the season. So it's one of those where maybe they don't see a lot of notches in the win column late. But I do think that Virginia Tech will be a feisty out this season, and I think that they'll be much more competitive than we saw down the stretch last year. So I actually like this team to make a bowl game. I think there's a very strong opportunity for them to clear their win total of 6.5. I think they'll be a good team this year.
Let's get to a team that was up and down a year ago. And, you know, they made the change midseason to fire Justin Wilcox. Nick Rolovich comes in on an interim basis, kind of steadies the ship, if you will. So many of us here on this podcast were on Hawaii in the bowl game, and the Bows came all the way back to win that bowl game, one of the more fun bowl games to watch. So the keys are handed over to Tosh Lupoi. Rolovich stays on as the associate head coach and quarterbacks coach, which I think was a smart move, because that allows Jaron Kiave Sangapulateli to stay. But, you know, I do think, if I had to guess, Duck, I think there's going to be a lot of people who are expecting big things from Cal because of the JKS return. But you look at the schedule, UCLA to open, they're a slight favorite right now in that game at 1.5 at FanDuel. A trip to Syracuse, Clemson at home on a Friday night. They come to UNLV, at SMU, at NC State, at Virginia. The schedule is pretty challenging for Cal for a win total of 6.5. Where are you on the Cal Golden Bears in year one under Tosh Lupoi?
I think year one will probably be the toughest assignment of his tenure. I think that he'll win here long term, and I think they definitely have a talented quarterback in JKS to build around. The problem is the offensive line, which surrendered 32 sacks, and the Cal team rushing average was 2.7 yards per carry for the entire season. They couldn't run the football, they couldn't protect JKS, and the offensive line has some significant holes. They do have a couple receivers that are portaling in from the G5 that I think can help provide some explosiveness, but I don't know if the offense is going to look as dynamic as we saw at times last season, and we saw the offense really sputter at times last season, so I think it'll be more of a mixed bag. The defense is really going to be a problem, I think, just from a talent standpoint. A lot of the production is lost. A lot of the top tacklers are gone. A lot of the sack guys are gone, and I think the schedule draw is one where it might just be tough for California to really get on a roll. I think that week one game against UCLA, I still think California's favorite. I don't know that they should be. And then they got to go to Syracuse very early, and that'll be a tough road spot going across the country. Clemson comes in, and that'll probably be a play-up spot for California when they get to host Clemson. Maybe it's a late game after dark. Things get weird in Berkeley. That could be. But then immediately after that, they got to go to Vegas, and UNLV, that'll be a tricky one for them to go down there and win that one. I mean, Virginia Tech will be tough. Three road games in a row later in the season against SMU, NC State, and Virginia. I have them losing all three of those situations. You get a game against Stanford, your rival, and that was a game you lost by three touchdowns last season. So I see too many situations where California is really going to be up against it situationally, and they're playing teams that I think are emerging in this conference. So I actually like the win total under 6.5. I think it could still be deemed a successful season at 6-6 and you make a bowl game. There's just too many tricky spots here for me. I think this team could start 1-3, and then you've got that tough three-game stretch later on in the season. I just don't see them getting on a real solid roll, and that could derail things. Long-term, I think it'll be a good fit, but this season, I think 6-6 is kind of where they're at.
Let's get to a team that you do like, and the season starts with a trip to Brazil to take on Virginia. Right now, NC State, if you like the Wolfpack, that you can get them catching 3. FanDuel has it at 2.5, but BetMGM and DraftKings both have that game lined at 3. They have a trip to Vanderbilt in week 3, which could be a tricky spot. Situationally, week 4 against Appalachian State, but as you look at that schedule, you look for the Canes. There is no Canes on the schedule. There is no SMU on the schedule this year for NC State. And quarterback play, you know, you look around this conference, Duck, and you say, who are the best quarterbacks in the conference? Is it Mensa sitting there at Miami? I certainly think CJ Bailey is in the discussion. So they lost Hollywood Smothers to the transfer portal, who is around a 1,000-yard rusher. Justin Jolly went off to the pros. But where are you on this NC State team? Win total, if you want to lay some juice, 6.5 minus 80 to the over, 7.5 minus 10 both ways at multiple sports books.
Yeah, I don't bet a lot of regular season win overs, but this is one that I did bet. I think that North Carolina State will have a great chance to go 3-0 in the non-conference. They're projected to be about a touchdown underdog against Vanderbilt, who's going through a tremendous amount of transition themselves, losing Diego Pavia and several other key contributors. I don't necessarily pencil that in as a loss. I think NC State can go down there and compete. The opener against Virginia, I have that priced closer to a coin flip rather than the plus 3 that's out there at current. The schedule really is favorable because they do only have to play one of the top 5 projected finishers in ACC league play, and they get 6 of the bottom 8. I think there's a lot of situations that are going to be really favorable for North Carolina State this season. A lot of the tougher opponents that they have to play, they get at home, and the road schedule is not terribly hard to navigate. They go to Stanford. They've got 2 at the end with Florida State and North Carolina, but those are games I think they can certainly win. And I really like CJ Bailey. I thought he played very well last season, threw for 3,100 yards and 25 touchdowns. I like the running back Duke Scott coming back. The defensive line has some guys returning, and I like what they did in the portal defensively. Dave Doran has been a real consistent presence here at North Carolina State. He's the winningest coach in program history, been there for 15 seasons, and it always seems as though the bare minimum floor for North Carolina State is 6-6. I think that's true again this season. I think at absolute worst, they're a 6-6 bowl team, and I think that there's a real high opportunity for them to win 7, 8, or 9 games this season. I have them favored in 8 games. I've got them as slight underdogs in about 2 others. So I feel like there's going to be a lot of shots on goal for North Carolina State. I like the returning talent offensively. I think there's cohesiveness in the locker room with the coaching staff. It just seemed like a real opportunity to take a shot on over 6.5. I thought it should have been 7.5.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, the market has pretty much moved that way, so you obviously got a good number. If you want to lay some juice, you could lay $1.80, as I mentioned, on the over. You sent me over your notes on the ACC, and once again, I highly recommend over at the Action Network, he's done an in-depth breakdown of all of them. And in your notes, I'm going to read it verbatim. What is this program doing? And that would be Florida State. So let's dive into the Noles, who seem to be stuck on a contract they can't get off of with Mike Norvell. They had the magical season until it wasn't with the Jordan Travis injury. And since then, it's just been an absolute disaster. And it doesn't seem like it's going to get better anytime soon down there in Tallahassee. Win total 6.5, juiced under on the Noles. Where does this team go in 2026?
I really struggle to answer that question. I don't think that they upgraded at all at quarterback. Ashton Daniels comes in from Auburn, and I just don't see a lot of wow factor from him. This team struggled to run the football last season, despite Thomas Castellanos being able to have a little bit of mobility with his legs. You know, I think between the talent that they have returning and some of the guys that they portaled in, I think the running back room should be a little bit more explosive than what we saw last season. But of course, this is if the transfers along the offensive line hit. They have 5 new guys in there at O-line. I'm not sure necessarily we'll see it click right away. It'll be fine in the opener, but outside of that, it's going to be really tough for this bunch to really see a lot of improvement in the win column, even if the defense is a little better, if they're a little more consistent running the football. Because they have to play the top 4 projected in the ACC this season, and they only pluck 1 of the bottom 6, and that's a road game against Boston College. You've got 2 SEC opponents in the non-conference in Alabama and Florida, road trips to Pittsburgh, Miami, Louisville will be very tricky. You got to go to Alabama. I just think there's so many situations and there's so many better teams than Florida State, and all these teams found their way to have to play the Noles this season. I just don't see how this team exceeds more than 6 wins. And I think more often than not, the Florida State Seminoles miss a bowl game. It's another disappointing season. And eventually these guys have to determine if it's going to be about time to pull the plug on Norvell, despite the high buyout. I lean under the win total. I don't think this team's going to be very good.
All right, let's put a bow on the ACC with a couple more. By the way, Duck also likes under on Wake Forest. We went in depth on that the last time he came on the podcast about a month ago. So go check that out in the podcast feed. And he gave out his best bet on Wake under their win total. Let's hit a couple situational spots. You and I love to look for these. I went through a few, NC State against Appalachian State, sandwiched in between Vanderbilt and Louisville. The Clemson trip to Syracuse, we had mentioned. You know, an interesting spot for Cal going on the road for a non-conference game against the G6 team in UNLV, sandwiched in between Clemson and Virginia Tech, I think is interesting. A team we're going to talk about here in just a moment, UConn. They get UNC at home, and UNC, a team that will play Miami on Halloween, then Louisville on November 14th, and in the middle, they have to go on the road to the rent. So curious some of the situational spots that jumped out to you this year in the ACC.
Yeah, I've got a couple of more to add here, not to try to double up on all your work, but Cal has to go to NC State before the bye week. It's a young team. They have to play 9 straight weeks. They'll have just come off a trip to Dallas to likely lose against SMU, and then they have to double back on the plane to go to NC State. I think that'll be tricky. I think Clemson does have a tricky spot at Cal before after they play UNC, then they've got to go to Cal. They probably should be feeling good about themselves. And then they host Miami next, so maybe not fully focused there. Duke hosts Boston College. This is after an ACC championship rematch with Virginia. And then you've got back-to-back road games following at NC State and at Miami. Boston College might be just a real sleepy spot there for Duke. Again, Florida State at BC and at Pittsburgh back to back. You get those games in November. Could be cold. The team might might be middling through a 2-6 or 2-5 start. And then how motivated are they? Does apathy set in? Is the coach already gone? I mean, could be just really nasty there. You mentioned the Louisville spot against FCS Villanova, which I really like this spot against the number. Could be a major downer spot. Very little time to prepare. Villanova plays a physical style, slow pace style offensively, and I'm certainly not laying 5 touchdowns there. Pittsburgh at Virginia Tech on a Friday night, their first road trip of the season, is going into that environment. Yikes, not going to be very easy for Pittsburgh there. Syracuse has a tough one. They have to go to Pitt 5 days after hosting California. You just got to go on the road with only 5 days to prep. You're going to have a travel day in there. Might be a tough game plan for Syracuse in that one. And then, you know, SMU has one too at Stanford to close out the season off a Notre Dame road trip. And then you have to double back and then hit the farm. Could be a sleepy environment at Stanford. And going to Stanford is just not easy with these ACC teams. Just ask Florida State about that. Didn't go so well for the Noles last year as 19-point favorites. So could be a home dog spot for Stanford late in the year there.
All right, let's get to it. Let's fulfill our obligation, as we alluded to, a bet that you and I put together. Now, I will say when really it was you, and we just were able to kind of work together to get this bet down. But let's start with a win total in the Independent, and it's not Notre Dame. It's UConn. And for those of you who have listened to this podcast who love to bet, UConn has really been a great underdog in a number of spots, whether it was the bowl game 2 years ago against North Carolina, a number of spots this past year at home under Jim Mora. Well, Jim Mora has moved on. He is now the head coach of Colorado State, and their quarterback has moved on to the NFL. Skylar Bell has moved on to the NFL. There's a lot of changeover with the UConn Huskies. Win total is sitting at 6.5. And for those who don't know, Jason Candle comes in as their head coach. And, you know, it's interesting, and I want you to expand on this a little bit, because Jason Candle, I think on the surface, people will say, well, that's a pretty good hire. Yeah, I guess. I mean, he did less with more at Toledo year after year, fared well at times as an underdog. But UConn's schedule this year, it's FCS Lafayette, Maryland, Southern Miss, at Miami of Ohio, Syracuse, Temple, UMass, at Air Force, UNC, James Madison, Old Dominion, and then how about a end-of-the-season trip to Laramie to take on Wyoming? You need 7 wins to hit this over, and you and I like the under on the Huskies.
Yeah, I don't see it going well this year. They're at the bottom in terms of returning producing talent from last season's team. They lost a lot of playmakers, both at receiver. Their quarterback, Fagnano, is gone. Defensive talent departs. And Jim Mora departed. He really was able to calm the choppy waters at UConn during his tenure there and really elevated the performance of this program. Jason Candle steps in, and on the surface, like you mentioned, it's a decent hire, but I'm telling you right now, in the MAC, Jason Candle and Toledo underperformed time and time again. They always have the most talent in the MAC. They always have the best trench play on both sides, defensive line and offensive line. You would look at the talent level and generally how the schedule would break for Toledo and think that Candle should have won 4 or 5 MAC championships during his tenure at Toledo. I think that he ended up winning 1. And now he steps into a situation where you're playing an independent schedule. Every game that you play your opponents, you're in kind of just a tricky situational spot one way or the next. There are 70 new players on this roster. There's very, very little experience at quarterback. I'm not really in love with any of the 3 options that they have, including Jake Merklinger, who comes in from Tennessee, and Kalib Osborne, who played in the bowl game for Toledo last season. Trey Cornist could be a bright spot at running back. He transfers in from Central Michigan, but there's just not a lot of other wow factor in the backfield. I think the receiver position is lacking playmakers. There's, you know, a lot of Toledo backups on the roster that really didn't produce last season. Three massive, big body tight ends, key contributors in the pass receiving and run blocking department, depart for UConn. And I really don't think that they did a great job of replacing their tight end talent. Everybody along the O-line is gone. You're getting a couple contributors from the Toledo two deep and a couple of P4 cast offs, but I just don't think there's any chance they're as good on the ground this season as they were last season. The entire front seven is rebuilt with plenty of Mac and G5 talent that comes in, but it's going to be a big step back. I have Connecticut favored in 3 or 4 games this year. They're going to be dogs against Maryland, at Miami, Ohio, Syracuse, at Temple, at Air Force, even hosting North Carolina, James Madison, and Old Dominion. I have them as 4.5-point underdogs or greater in every one of those situations. And then at the very end, you got to go to Laredice, and Wyoming is a team that needs to get to a bowl game, and they're going to be at home for that one. That's going to be a big situation for Wyoming. I think it's really, really going to be tough waters this year for UConn. At best, if everything goes their way, I think 6-6 is a distinct possibility, but I think it's closer to 5 wins or even 4-8.
So you and I played that bet. -150 to the under, right now available at DraftKings, under 6.5. We also got a little funky and we got a little creative here because you could parlay win totals and alt win totals as well. So if you don't like under 6.5 for the UConn Huskies, how about under 7.5 for the UConn Huskies? And you pair that with under 6.5 for FBS newbie Sacramento State, who, of course, as we all recall, will be headed into the Mid-American Conference. They will play Eastern Michigan in week 0, Fresno State, North Dakota State, UMass, Bowling Green, Ohio, Ball State, Kent State, Toledo, Central Michigan, and then they will wrap up the season with a tricky trip out to our beloved island to take on Hawaii to close out the season. Also, Brennan Marion has moved on, so they have a new head coach in there at Sacramento State. I believe if you look at Bill Conley, they're one of the lowest in returning production. So we got a little funky. The juice -122 under UConn 7.5 and under 6.5 for the Hornets of Sacramento State.
Yeah, and it's just a much different FBS transitional situation than what North Dakota State is going through. The Bison played in the premier conference in FCS. They were head and shoulders above everybody else in the trenches, them, South Dakota State, Montana State. But North Dakota State was so much better equipped along the offensive and defensive line to make this transition, which is why you'll see their win total much more respectable while playing in a tougher league. Sacramento State struggled in the trenches against Big Sky competition. It was a team that made the playoffs sporadically at the FCS level, and I think that they're really going to struggle here. Their quarterback situation is banking on Carson Conklin, who comes back to Sacramento State after spending a year at Fresno State. Jamar Curtis was an exquisite Patriot League running back at Lafayette, but really didn't get a lot of carries last season, and there's just very little zest, in my opinion, in the running back room. I see a lot of FCS level guys at receiver that'll struggle to get separation in the MAC. The defense looks like it's going to be a hair undersized, even by MAC standards. I just think that this bunch could struggle late in the season, especially when you have those road games. It'll be butt cold at some of those environments. It'll just be a different situation for Sac State. I just don't think the roster is ready to compete yet at this point. You look at the transition to FBS, and they talked about it for some time, but then, boom, it really ramped up and hit suddenly. And I just don't think that this program is going to be ready to compete week in and week out with the rigors of an FBS schedule. I have Sacramento State as underdogs in 8 games. I think the close is very tough, where you play Toledo, at Central Michigan, at Hawaii. I think North Dakota State, Fresno State, Ohio University will all be very tough games. I don't have them in a bowl this year. I like under 5.5. Under 6.5, when we were talking about putting this play together with UConn, was an absolute no-brainer. So I really like the situations we have here with Connecticut and Sacramento State. I like the parlay on the alt lines. I like both under the regular lines as well for Connecticut and Sac State to go under. And it's going to be struggles for these programs this year.
Minus 122 is the juice on UConn, under 7.5, Sacramento State under 6.5. And we also played UConn under 6.5 at minus 150. That is available at DraftKings. Both those available at DK. Duck, always appreciate it, brother. I know we'll be doing this again. Continue the great work and the insight. And for folks who have not read your work, tell them where all your work is available.
Yeah, so most of it's available at the Action Network. We started our off-season, regular season win content series. I post a lot of that stuff on Twitter, but the articles are up at Action Network, and we'll start deep diving conference previews here coming up pretty soon. And then in season, I'll host the BetUS show twice a week. I'm on the Kyle Kerms program. I've been a regular participant here on VSiN too, which has been really great. So I'm excited to be on your program routinely, and you'll be able to look forward to me being on again.
Duck, you're the man. Appreciate it. Great stuff. And let's get ourselves a couple of win totals in the bag. We'll talk to you soon, man.
All right, my man. We'll see you at the window. Thanks.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back wrapping things up on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Once again, we have a email address, cfbpod@vsin.com. So if you want to give us your thoughts, guest recommendations, guest requests, just want to get something off your mind, cfbpod@vsin.com. We are up and running for the entire summer. My vow to you is once a week in your feed, we will be having a bet. Did put out a tweet on Wednesday with the game of the year line of Notre Dame and Miami. And as you would imagine, it has caused a good reaction. Chuck Todd, shout out to the political analyst who I think we are part of his escape from the political world. He said he is going to be there. He said, can't wait to attend my first ever game at Notre Dame. So he's happy that it's after Election Day. So Chuck Todd, friend of the pod. We won't be friends that week. Me and Chris Felica, we won't be friends that week, but it will be a raucous environment, no doubt, at Notre Dame Stadium in South Bend in early November. We'll dive into Game of the Year lines a little bit later on in this month. Looking forward to catching up with my buddy Matt Grill from DraftKings Sportsbook. And a shout out to DraftKings. They are the first sportsbooks who put up those group of six win totals that are out there and a couple of Game of the Year lines that we alluded to over at BetMGM. So it makes sense that since we discussed the ACC with Duck, that this clip started to make the rounds from Greg McElroy's podcast earlier this week. Dabo Swinney, head coach of Clemson, off of a fantastic 7-6 season, losing in the Pinstripe Bowl 22-10 to Penn State. He is complaining, I guess, about the lack of funding that they have, but they've had so much success, but he is complaining about it. Here's a little taste of Dabo Swinney.
And we always got to, you know, have a chip on our shoulder. It just is what it is. We don't have the alumni base that some places have. We don't have some of the things that some of the schools that we've played and had to compete with over the years have. It's just the way it is. But I've always we're 3-1 against Ohio State. We're 4-2 against Notre Dame. Notre Dame has their own TV station. They make their own rules. They print their own money. They got like a money machine in the backyard or something. We've beaten Texas A&M a couple times. We've beaten Oklahoma a couple times. We've won 4 in a row against Auburn. We've beaten Nick Saban in Alabama in 2 national championships. And so we've done all of that at Clemson. When I got the job here, prior to our tenure here, Clemson hadn't won the ACC in 20 years. And it wasn't a 17-team league in those days.
And that was on Greg McElroy's podcast, which, by the way, I'm a big fan of Greg McElroy's podcast. I'm a fan of a lot of college football podcasts, a lot of really good ones out there. And Greg's is part of my rotation, and he gets great guests. I don't know if I want to call Dabo a great guest because of his bitching about whatever that was. By the way, maybe look yourself in the mirror, Coach Sweeney, because yes, you have won multiple national championships. What you have done at Clemson in the past is phenomenal. To win those national titles, to have those pros. Just to remind you, Coach, I don't know if you forgot this, as you alluded to Notre Dame having a money spigot in their backyard and their own television network, which they don't have. They have a television deal with NBC, which doesn't bring in as much money as the Big Ten or the SEC. The SEC, by the way, is partnered up with the same broadcast network that your conference, the ACC, is partnered with. So that aside, because Notre Dame does not have its own television network, like you incorrectly said, it seems to be a you problem. And we just had the NFL draft a couple weeks ago, and little old Clemson, the team that you're in charge of, had 9 draft picks. That's pretty darn good. Do you know who had more draft picks? I'm going to ask you, Coach. Who had more draft picks, Notre Dame or Clemson? Oh, it was actually Clemson, believe it or not. Clemson, little old Clemson, who went 7-5 just this past year, had the third most draft picks of any college out there. Actually, fourth most, tied with Miami and Texas Tech. Ohio State, 1. Alabama, Texas A&M, 2, each had 10. Ohio State had 11. And then 7-6, Clemson. You know what's funny about his complaining to Greg McElroy? If you look at those six teams I mentioned to you, Ohio State, Alabama, Texas A&M, Miami, Texas Tech, and Clemson. Trivia question to all of you listening. What are those six teams haven't come? Well, 5 of them went to the playoff. 1 didn't. And that would be the Clemson Tigers. 1 team won 7 games. Ohio State, undefeated regular season. Alabama went to the playoff. Shouldn't have. Went to the playoff, though. Texas A&M went to the playoff. Miami made it to the national championship game. Texas Tech went to the playoff. Clemson did not. Won 7 games in a mediocre conference. Lost their bowl game against another underachieving team in Penn State. Penn State, by the way, coming in with 8 draft picks. And Notre Dame, who is preseason, expected to make a run towards the national championship. Believe it or not, despite what Dabo said, had 6 draft picks. Both had 2 in the first round. And the last thing I'll say about this is that he alluded to Notre Dame having a, I believe it was a money machine. Thanks for the recruiting pitch. Marcus Freeman should text Dabo Sweeney. In this day and age, when you're allowed to pay recruits, saying out loud that Notre Dame has more money to give to recruits than we do seems like a really silly thing to say, right? We don't have enough money, so why don't you go to these other places? You're allowed to pay players now. So if you're saying that, I don't know, Notre Dame just has a money machine, seems like a really nice thing to say about Notre Dame when you're a youngster looking to go to a program. So Clemson deserves a lot of credit for what they were able to do. And as a Notre Dame fan, I'd love to have 2 national championships in my back pocket in recent memory. Notre Dame does not. But right now, Notre Dame is certainly lined up much better than Clemson is. Win total sitting at 7.5, as we just discussed. They lost 9 picks to the NFL draft and won 7 games a year ago. So please spare me with your woe is me bullshit down there in Clemson and figure out how to get into this day and age of college football. What you've done is an awesome. What you're doing, not so much, but continue to complain to Greg McElroy and others. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Thanks to our guest today, Joshua Nunn at Step on a Duck, part of the Action Network. Some best bets that he threw your way, including a little collaborative effort, UConn under 6.5, and a little parlay, UConn under 7.5. with Sacramento State under 6.5. We got two producers for this podcast that do an amazing job, Wyatt Tomchek and Ryan Hunter, for putting this all together. I'm Tim Murray. Please continue to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. We're also up on YouTube, youtube.com/collegefootballbettingpodcast. We'll be back next week with another episode right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.